There's been a national hysteria recently concerning reports of large, mysterious drones flying low directly over residential neighborhoods and critical infrastructure, including power grids and military facilities. Described as being the size of a car, residents have reported seeing clusters of 50 or more drones moving in a single wave, resembling something straight out of a science fiction movie. At first, people thought they were planes, maybe helicopters, but these machines don't behave like that. They hover, stop mid-flight, and dart sideways with precision before rocketing into the sky at unimaginable speeds. Since the vehicles use Federal Aviation-approved lights, they are unlikely alien craft. One of the most critical clues of what they are then lies in where the drones are coming from. Witnesses consistently report seeing the drones emerging from the Atlantic Ocean, flying inland in organized formations. Drones have a finite battery life, meaning they cannot fly across the ocean from distant foreign shores. That said, the Pentagon has explicitly denied the existence of an Iranian mothership or any foreign vessel operating off the Atlantic coast. This leaves only one plausible explanation. These drones are being launched from U.S. military ships positioned just off the coast, pointing to a deliberate and coordinated operation, one that aligns closely with recent Navy programs designed to test UAVs in real-world conditions. Of course, the idea that the government or military intelligence agencies use classified technology as part of a secret space program is not new. There have been instances where previously classified space programs were declassified. For example, the Manned Orbiting Laboratory was a U.S. Air Force initiative during the Cold War, which was intended for military reconnaissance, but was canceled in 1969. This shows that there have been secretive space-related projects in the past. Furthermore, there have been various individuals claiming to be whistleblowers or insiders that have come forward with assertions about secret space programs, often involving alleged advanced technologies, covert operations, and even supposed extraterrestrial encounters that bypass public oversight. One example is Gary McKinnon, a Scottish hacker who in 2002 broke into US military and NASA computers over a 13-month period to search for evidence of UFOs and other technologies.
I was obsessed with UFOs. I was dying to find out the information. The internet was a real enabler for finding out information by going to places you shouldn't be in because they were so open. There were a lot of text files that had lists of places, installations, military bases, Air Force bases, Navy sites, NASA sites. So there was a lot to go through. But I did find a goldmine of information.
Gary found folders containing images of what he said looked like extraterrestrial spaceships, blueprints for anti-gravitic craft, and most shocking of all, he stumbled upon an off-world database of personnel titled Non-Terrestrial Officers. According to McKinnon, he unearthed a secret U.S. military program that existed entirely in space.
I found the spreadsheet. It was actually titled in the column, Non-Terrestrial Officers, as well as officers' names, it had ship names. None of these were ocean-going ships. It was astounding. They're not Navy, they're not an Army, and not even Air Force. So to me, I was thinking there must be an off-planet Space Force, or Space Fleet, at least.
Having communicated with Gary personally, my own assessment is that he seemed very credible and sincere about his findings. The U.S. officially established the Space Force as a new branch of the military, focusing on space warfare during President Trump's first term, which has contributed to speculation about secret military space activities. While there isn't concrete public evidence for a secret space program in the dramatic, widespread sense often portrayed in conspiracy theories, there has been and continues to be classified military and space activities, as well as whistleblowers that continue to come forward, alleging the existence of advanced space capabilities, suggesting that not all space activities are publicly known. In December 2020, former Israeli space security chief Chaim Eshed claimed in an interview with an Israeli national newspaper that the United States government had been in contact with extraterrestrial life for years, and that President Trump was planning to disclose existing agreements between Earth governments and off-world federations. Chaim Eshed, who headed Israel's space security program for 30 years, also said that there's already a joint base underground on Mars, where they collaborate with American astronauts. As unlikely as this may seem to many, these claims are difficult to completely dismiss due to Haim's status and credibility. Isaac Ben Israel, chairman of Israel Space Agency, said, quote, "If I would have to choose one person to be called the father of Israel's space capabilities, it would be Chaim Eshed." The data disclosed by Israel's top space official was mirrored by former Canadian Defense Minister Paul Hellyer, who made headlines by publicly announcing that he not only believed in the existence of anti-gravitic UFO craft, but made an astonishing statement that he claims to have knowledge that extraterrestrials are visiting Earth, and demanded that world governments disclose alien technology that could be used to solve environmental problems on the planet. Perhaps most shocking is the testimony put forth by U.S. Naval Intelligence Officer William Tompkins, who not only claimed to have been briefed by U.S. spies during World War II about the German participation with an advanced Nordic race of off-world scientists, but alleges that he himself worked alongside these Nordic people on the Apollo space program in conjunction with NASA.
I want to try to explain the Apollo program. First of all, Apollo was done 7 years before, after our original moon mission program. And I want to explain what Apollo really was. First phase, well, yes, go to the moon, pick up your rocks, take your pictures, and come home, okay? Second phase, build a 10,000-man naval research facility under the ground on the moon. Next phase, go to all of the planets in the solar system and build stations on their planets or their moons. Fourth stage, go out into the galaxy and go to the 12 closest stars, Alpha Centauri being the first. We had to drop that because we found out that it had two suns and the radiation was going to be impossible. So we skipped that one, but we were to go to the 11 closest. Do the same thing, except we would start the program to interface with the people on that star's planets. And we would go into marketing. Yes, we would have the Navy go there. but we were going to set up commerce, all right, with the 11 closest stars, planets. Then the last one was to do the same thing out into the galaxy and be extensive. And that was to have a continuous production launch program from 1963 till 1999. Continuous launching of various types of vehicles. And I talk about our truck vehicles, which are the Novas. These are massive rockets, which are propelled by liquid oxygen, liquid hydrogen, standard rocket engines. Okay? For the first missions in local planets here, we'll use the rockets. But as we move out into the galaxy, we're going to be using anti-gravitational and electromagnetic propulsion. Okay? So now we go back to the moon mission part of this. And what I want to explain is that the vehicles that we designed for all of these missions after the moon mission are massive. They're like 40 times the size of the little Apollo over here on the side of the picture. Okay? And so what we're really doing is that we're developing a massive production program for millions of people here on this planet go out into the galaxy. All right. Along with that program, we have a agreement and a contract from NASA to do the Apollo. Okay, so Boeing has the first stage, Douglas has the second stage, we don't have anybody on the third stage yet, but we have the fourth stage, which is called the S4B. So we're supposed to design the S4B and do everything that's necessary, but nothing in the contract can we do, because everything that NASA is doing is manual. Everything that we're doing is computerized. Two different, totally different ways. So what we have then is a very large engineering department in Douglas who is designing the Apollo missions, period. We just happen to have the largest number of engineers and scientists on our part for the S4B stage. So here we have two beautiful Nordic girls and this good-looking Nordic guy that helps them, he's not there all the time, who are contracted to make sure that we do all of the Apollo. Wow. Hey, this is cool. Now, you have to look at my secretary. Yes, she does look like somebody else, okay?
William Tompkins claims that he worked with an extremely attractive, Nordic-looking race, which resembled Maria Orsic, a Croatian-born leader of the Vril Society, an esoteric group in Germany involved in psychic mediumship, metaphysics, and the exploration of free energy and anti-gravitic propulsion technologies. The narratives around her involvement include claims that she received channeled messages from the star system Aldebaran, which is located in the eye of the constellation of Taurus, with technical data for building flying machines, which former SS officers linked to the development of early UFOs. One of the more mysterious aspects of Maria Orsic's story is her disappearance at the end of World War II. Various accounts suggest that she vanished in 1945, possibly escaping to South America, Antarctica, or even another planet. Her last known act was reportedly leaving a note saying, quote, "None of us are staying here."
We were like minutes, not years, from losing that war. but it didn't make any difference to Germany. They infiltrated our aerospace and our advanced medical systems here mm-hmm. in the country. And essentially, they got NASA, which then, of course, they were running, to the Apollo missions, which were German missions before they left Germany and went right. to Antarctica.
Right.
That's what Germany was doing. So they came over here and they did the same thing here. I don't think we sit down and sort of evaluate the timeline of all of this.
No.
I think it's kind of hard to believe you didn't win the war. And it's very hard to realize even today that this is still a major controlling element in the United States, and actually in England, too.
Uh-huh.
So it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, extraordinary. Antarctica, advanced technology. NASA, a German operation. The Germans put us in space. The Germans took us to the moon, if we went to the moon, and most people think we did.
We did.
While there is some doubt regarding the official story about the manned moon mission put forth by NASA, which skeptics claim was at least partially filmed in a studio, very few are aware that there are claims that Germany, under the Nazi regime, achieved a moon landing first using top-secret alternative propulsion technology, with claims varying from the 1930s to 1942. These secret projects often reference craft such as the Hanabu or Vril, which are said to have anti-gravitic capabilities. Another aspect of this theory includes the notion that Nazis established a base on the moon, which allegedly was designed in the shape of a giant swastika inside of a crater, with numerous subterranean levels extending deep below the moon's surface.
And, of course, we were using the information that in Admiral Riccobono's office, he was commander of Naval Air Station San Diego, and that was his published mission. Nobody knew what he was actually doing with these operatives coming back from Germany with all this space information.
Right.
But jointly working with the Nordic Navy. And who are the people that has been assisting at least us on the Apollo?
Mm-hmm.
There's one real important thing I think we all need to. We need to address it. We need to try to relate to it.
Sure. Go to it.
This universe is a very, very big place to be, okay?
Yeah.
as many as 200 billion galaxies exist out there. We didn't talk about planetary systems like the solar system.
Now, these are galaxies like the Milky Way. These are galaxies, 200 billion, at least.
At least 200 billion. And then we have billions of stars in our own galaxy, the Milky Way. Oh, my gosh. And so for us to take this approach, which unfortunately we've been lied to, like you said, that there's no other people out there in the universe but us, it's kind of naive.
It's ridiculous is what it is. It's absolutely absurd to even say something as dumb as that. Good Lord.
200 billion galaxies, all with over billions of stars. My gosh. And these stars, most of these stars have planets.
Yeah.
Like the little solar system that we have. But just to think that we're part of this situation. And that people have been cruising, certainly not just the Milky Way galaxy, all of these other galaxies for probably billions of years. And so we're just touching the tip of the iceberg when we're talking about this subject.
Yes.
And I think people should write that number down and every once in a while just look at it and stop and think of what we're now visualizing. We can go out into the desert, or we can go out of town and just on a nice clear night, look up at the sky. There's hundreds of thousands of stars that we can see. Oh my gosh, you know, it's fantastic. Even astronomy is fantastic. And our position in this is unbelievably more important than maybe we think. But we are just now learning what's going on. And I think that the more we can discuss this whole subject, the better we all are going to be. And sort of tonight, I don't know what you folks were going to say, but I would sort of like to talk about the galaxy itself. And
oh, that's fine.
A little bit,
yeah.
A little bit about where we are in it. And essentially, the situation of, say, hypothetical cases where you will accept that other people are out there in the galaxy, they're cruising the galaxy. Some of them are just grandchildren with grandma and grandpa on a cruise ship, a cruise galaxy ship, cruising the galaxy, having them all. Others are coming here, they take a look at us, they don't pay much attention, and they go on to the rest of their cruise.
So it's tourism exists on the basis that you're describing it. I've often poked fun at that knowledge that people coming here as tourists would see quite a show on this planet.
Well, you're right, really. And I think maybe when they could just look at how we don't necessarily get along with each other, they could be laughing all the way to the next part of the galaxy.
I agree with you.
This could be fun. And
how many galaxies again? Now, keep in mind when you look up at the Milky Way, friends, and it stretches from horizon to horizon, a band of these bright, concentrated dots of light. That's our little, relatively speaking, galaxy. It's an enormous place, this galaxy. How many galaxies, tell them again, that we know about or can project are out there in the known universe?
We have over 200 billion galaxies, all of them with billions of stars. And I think this is really important to address.
Yeah. Yeah.
To get ourselves out of this everyday thing that we're forced into and stop and think that we now have this opportunity, for instance, to join with other Nordic people and go out into the galaxy with them. Not all that stuff about the wars going on and all the bad side of it, but stop and think of our opportunities. We're just around the corner. We will be able to cruise ships out in the galaxy ourselves.
It is an amazing thing to contemplate. We're kept, Bill, in such a little thimble, a little mental prison by the controllers of this planet. We have a birthright to know about what you've just mentioned. We don't think about that. We're not talked to about that. We're not told about that. We're not encouraged to ponder that. We're encouraged to feel subservient, trapped in debt, and under great stress all the time in this little microcosm we call planet Earth.
Beautiful. Well put. Really. It's astounding. And actually, what we're going into, instead of being negative, it's going to be a lot of fun. You're going to enjoy what takes place. When we talk about the galaxies and we talk about the numbers of people or different civilizations that could be out there, actually, we need to look at our opportunities and the situation with certain extraterrestrials who are assisting us. And I hate to go back to just a couple of three people back at Douglas on the Apollo program, but I have to sort of address that because these three people that were helping us were Nordic people, essentially our cousins, if you want the truth. And they come from a different part of the arm of the Milky Way galaxy that we're all in. So to address these three Nordic people whose thrust was nothing negative for nearly 4 years, they wanted us to be successful on the Apollo program. And when we talk about the Apollo program, I don't like to repeat things, but I think it's something that's important.
Fine, because it's fine to repeat.
Just going to the moon was not the Apollo program. So in the Apollo program, those two wonderful young ladies and that healthy-looking Nordic guy who helped us on the Apollo program to make it successful for nearly 3.5 years. I think that all of the discussion for those periods of time with these three people never made one negative comment. Everything was plus. Everything was for accomplishment, developing it, methods. And yes, they are very smart people. They come from a different part of the Milky Way galaxy. They were here to help us, join them out in the galaxy, and help us fix our own planet. These were the missions. These were what these people were doing. And there wasn't one single time in the entire time that there was anything negative. Everything was plus. The German people, of course, were never allowed to even know that this extraterrestrial assistance had been given to the SS. And the fact that we're in this learning curve, which is right now going straight up across the charts, we're being exposed to reality. We're being we're learning what we should have learned in the university and in the schools, but it wasn't taught.
As hard as it may be to believe that we could possibly live alongside a more technologically advanced, space-faring branch of humanity and not know it, is it not true that such a scenario already exists on Earth? Several uncontacted tribes would likely be shocked to discover the technology that we enjoy, such as the computers we are using now, yet they remain blissfully oblivious and unaware. This point was made recently by Scott Adams in this short clip.
So New York Post had some new photos from a never-before-seen, a never-contacted tribe in the Amazon. So there are a few hundred people in this tribe that have never had contact with anybody outside their tribe, at least in our lifetime. And I guess there are a bunch of them. So there are a bunch of these little tribes that have never had contact. Now, the reason they don't have contact is that the government of Brazil, for example, knows that if they do get contacted, they may not have resistance to all the diseases that we're used to. So it might just kill them. Just contact with us would give them all kinds of diseases. But so somebody put some kind of like a trail cam or something. So they weren't there in person to take the pictures, but they got the pictures remotely. And how wild is it that there's a tribe that doesn't know there are things like computers and phones and airplanes? Just think about that. So you're this tribe in Africa, not Africa, in Brazil. You've never seen any civilization outside of your little tribe. They're all just running around naked with sticks and bows and arrows. And you see an airplane fly over. What are you going to think that is? But here's the thing that blows my mind. Logically, you would think it's impossible that they couldn't have contact. Like, how in the world does how does the world keep them from contact with civilization? Like, civilization's everywhere, except where they are, I guess. And it makes me wonder, you know, the theories that the drones are really UFOs and it might be from another planet, or maybe it's early humans who have an advanced civilization, but they hide in the core of the earth or under the water or something. And I usually reject that because I think, what are the odds? I mean, seriously, what are the odds that I grew up in a world and I'm sort of a primitive and there's this advanced civilization and it's sort of all around me, but they're so good at hiding that I don't even know they exist. And I rule that out because there's no way I wouldn't notice if there were an advanced civilization surrounding me. Of course I'd notice that. But these uncontacted tribes don't notice it. So would I notice? It's kind of a wake-up call that we could be an uncontacted tribe, basically. Because if somebody had as much better technology as we have compared to the uncontacted tribes, the same amount of better technology, they would be invisible to us. And we'd see stuff that we didn't understand. And we'd say, what is that? I don't know. What do you think? I don't know. What do you want to do about it? I don't know. I took a fuzzy picture of it. It's really all I can do. Maybe I'll post it online and people won't believe it's real. Yeah, that's a good idea. So we might be an uncontacted tribe. It's completely possible, which is just mind-blowing.
My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. My published work is available on Amazon and through all other major book outlets. If you'd like to support my work, you can do that through Patreon or various links available in the description section. Please subscribe and leave me your thoughts below as I read all the comments. Stay safe, and I hope to see you again soon.